Well, cloud computing might have made it look easy when he won the Grade 1 Preakness, but it was anything but. He had to defeat a Kentucky Derby winner and the two-year-old champion and overcome the fact that he had just three career starts. How did he do it? Whatever the exact answer is, it has something to do with a team effort among trainer Chad Brown, Buttsock agent Mike Ryan, and owner Seth Clareman and Bill Lawrence. Lawrence is this week's guest on the Thoroughbred Daily News podcast brought to you by TaylorMade, and we'll get his thoughts on a huge win by their group in the middle leg of the Triple Crown. But first, this message from TaylorMade.
And here it is. The 37-year wait is over. American Pharoah is finally the one. American Pharoah has won the Triple Crown.
Over the past four decades, TaylorMade has risen from a small boarding operation to the worldwide leader in thoroughbred sales and marketing. Here's Hall of Fame trainer Jerry Hollendorfer.
TaylorMade sales follow many horses that are training at the racetrack. And they are particularly adept at evaluating mares and placing them with a proper stallion after their racing careers are over. They are very straightforward and are also experts on confirmation of younger weanlings and yearlings.
My name is Tia Andrini, and I am from San Mateo, California. I've been doing business with TaylorMade for about a year now, and it's been one great experience after another. It started with my first TaylorMade venture when I bought an interest in the filly Catherine Sophia, which ultimately landed me 3 weeks later in the middle of the winner's circle of the 2016 Kentucky Oaks with her. The TaylorMade team is a group of truly outstanding individuals. They are knowledgeable, professional, and completely customer service driven. To me, the TaylorMade name epitomizes the term trusted advisor. That is exactly what they are, and I am very proud to be associated and doing business with them.
Discover what TaylorMade can do for you. Visit TaylorMadeFarm.com.
Bill Lawrence grew up near Saratoga, loved racing, made a lot of money in the business world, and dreamt of winning a Triple Crown race. This is Bill Finley with this week's TDN podcast, and our guest Bill Lawrence knows it rarely works out that way. Yet for him, that's precisely what happened last Saturday at Pimlico.
Nick Empire has taken the lead here. Midway on the far turn, he has taken over. Always Dreaming is put to a drive by John Velasquez, and he's not giving his best right now. Cloud Computing is third to the outside, and they're into the stretch, and it's Classic Empire turning for home with a 2.5 length lead. Cloud Computing has moved into second. Always Dreaming has dropped back through the field. They're coming into the final furlong. Classic Empire, here's Cloud Computing going for the upset. Classic Empire digs in. Cloud Computing draws alongside. They come to the finish together. Noses apart. Cloud Computing has defeated Classic Empire and the Preakness.
Well, Bill Lawrence, welcome to the TDN podcast. And you and Seth Clareman, your partner, have invested a lot of money in this sport, and you've won a lot of big races, but nothing quite like the Preakness. Just tell us, how did it feel to see those red and white colors cross the wire in front at Pimlico the other day?
Truly amazing, more than we could have imagined. We've been very lucky, as you said, we won a lot of big races. This was like another level, probably 10 times bigger. I think even just listening to their playback for the that you just played, and probably have heard it 20 times, it still was probably as big and excited I just got again as any win besides winning the Preakness. Just hearing it again, I mean, it's incredible how much elation it brought to me, my family, my friends. It's just been a great couple of days.
And I'm sure you'll never get tired of hearing that race call. Now, if you watch the race, Classic Empire puts away Always Dreaming. He starts to pull away from the field, and honestly, it looked like the best you could hope for was second. It looked like Classic Empire had this race won. At the 3/16 poll, did you still believe? Did you still think you could win it?
Oh, yeah, we did. I mean, we were probably happy mentally that we looked like we were going to at least be second, but you know, Chad Brown horses, they finish. Mm-hmm. They don't hang. When he tells you he's got them ready, and he and his whole barn were really excited about this way that this horse was coming in, and obviously you're trying to run down a champion in his own right with Classic Empire, but once he got the horse out, Javi got him out. He looked like he had some horse left, and it looked like we had just, you know, a lot of ground still to catch him. And you never know, you're rooting, you're screaming your lungs out, you're yelling go. I think there was a one moment where we pulled alongside where Classic Empire put his head kind of a little in front of us. You had a brief nanosecond in your mind to go no. And then we kind of surged ahead and got ahead in front, and then you realized that that was the finish line. It happened so quick that it was thrilling, and it was just awesome.
Now, Bill, I don't think I'm stretching things when I say the following. This horse was perfectly managed, starting with the decision to pass the Kentucky Derby. And generally no one, and I mean no one, does that when they have enough points to get into the field. And I understand he had another horse in Practical Joke, but people dream to get into the Kentucky Derby, even if they're 99-1. And how was the decision made to pass the Derby? And was there ever a moment when anyone among the team second-guessed it or thought, you know, boy, what are we doing here?
No, not before or after. And I guess we're a little unique. We had the first alternate and never even shipped in currency swap a few years back. We're looking to make sure that, one, we think we can win the race. Two, we're trying to make sure that we're not going to hurt the prospect for a horse to do well down the road. So the Derby is obviously very prestigious, but with 20 horses now, because as you said, everybody takes the shot no matter what, it's you know, a very tough race. You got 160,000, 170,000 people, which those horses are never exposed to, the big crowd. You've got 20 horses in the gate. And I think if you look, you typically have got, you know, two or three, four horses that come out a little dinged up. You get another four or five that never seem to run back to some of their potential, and it's kind of half the field. So we got very lucky. Practical Joke made a nice run in there, and you know, Joel Rosario gave him such a good ride that he never kind of banged into any other horses, and which is, again, very hard to do with 20 horses. And obviously by holding Cloud Computing out, you know, he didn't get beat up. But, you know, we asked a lot of them already. In horse racing, you kind of have to play the hand you're dealt. And, you know, people, a few people have second-guessed and said, why didn't they run in the Derby? If we had run in the Derby and a horse got beat up and didn't run until the fall, everybody say, why do they push him so fast? And put him into the Derby, they probably could have waited and won the Preakness. So, you know, you're never fully right. You're guessing. These animals, you know, they get temperatures taken and looked at and looked at their legs and all. But unlike human athletes, they can't tell you that today's the day or they're not feeling good or they need to sit out. They don't call in sick on their own. And so you make your best guesses. In this case, it worked out. Obviously, Chad's the one that said we're just pushing him too soon, and you know, we were actually happy that we could get him to the Preakness. The initial sense was, you know, you win a maiden six in February, you say, well, maybe he's something, let's put him in the stakes. He runs second in the Gotham, so you kind of can't say, well, okay, well, let's run him in an allowance race because he's eligible. So you say, let's put him in the Wood. Probably what helped us was that we didn't win the Wood. I think if you win the Wood, then, and if you'd won the Gotham and you're undefeated 3-for-3, then everybody's really saying, how do you not put him in the Derby?
Sure.
He could be the favorite. So I think we probably got a kind of, in a strange way, lucky in the fact that he kind of didn't break too good in the Wood, and it was kind of a little bit of a speed favor in track, in our opinion, that day, and the horses ran good. Irish War Cry ran good, but that kind of took us off the radar and said, you know, we're just maybe putting him out there a little bit too quick. So, you know, you run him in the Derby. Let's say he wins the Derby. Can you put him in the Preakness 2 weeks later? And then what if he wins? Try saying you're not going to run for the Triple Crown.
Right.
But how do you run a horse six times in kind of 4.5 months or 4 months even?
Right.
When it's his first start. This is not a horse that got to run as a two-year-old. I guess, you know, we didn't challenge the Curse of Apollo, which is the last horse to win that didn't run as a two-year-old, goes back to 1888 or some, you know, 130 years. I'm reading all the things that, you know, a horse that's only been won a maiden race has only won the Preakness twice in the last 95 years. A horse with his fourth start rarely does it. So we kind of pushed the pretty hard just to even try to run in the Preakness, if you look historically.
Sure.
So we felt really good about the fact that the timing was good, and Chad did a great job, and, I mean, Javi followed the instructions, I mean, to the letter.
Mm-hmm.
Had him in the exact spot that we wanted, including saying, and at the end, of course, get him on the finish line with his nose in front of everybody.
Well, as you mentioned, I mean, this is a scenario where virtually everything worked out perfectly for you guys, the horse, et cetera. And, you know, people are making a big deal, as they should, I believe, about the fact that because of the way you managed the horse, you had the 6 weeks off. And really, the other two horses that kind of, quote unquote, mattered in the race, Classic Empire and Always Dreaming, ran in the Derby and had just 2 weeks rest. How much of an advantage is that for your horse?
I think it's an advantage, but I think it's a disadvantage in the fact that they're far less experienced, far less seasoned. Obviously, the two other horses that were kind of the favorites had not only shown up with the big crowd and with a big pressure environment, they managed to get through 20 horses. I guess in the case of Always Dreaming, he had a pretty good trip, but Classic Empire showed a lot of heart by getting kind of banged out of the start, making his way through the field and finishing pretty strongly. So they had a bit of experience. I think the thing that people have to understand is, you know, nobody told them they had to come back and run on 2 weeks either. Obviously, if you win the Derby, it's hard to not run the next one, but it's what makes the Triple Crown hard. These horses are never going to run against 20 horses. They're never going to run 2 weeks later. You know, they're not going to go through the things. They're never going to run a mile and a half, more likely, if they run in the Belmont. So it's just, it's very, very tough. And it's, you know, always been tough. It always hasn't been the same sequence. Sometimes the races were even closer. Sometimes they run in a different order for those of us who follow the sport and look at the history. But the present configuration, you know, I get why people want to run in the Derby, but I think at the start with 20 horses is really, and with the largest crowd these horses will see, is a tough first race at the start of the Triple Crown. And this one, you know, clearly it helped to be in a 10-horse field. Clearly the worst post we're going to get is 10. As opposed to 17, which our other horse got in the Derby. And, you know, this horse coming off of three starts, getting a 17 or 20 post that had kind of come out of the gate slow the two starts prior, you're almost beat right there. In this case, we're in the two posts, which made us feel good, that even if he missed the break, at least he can probably work his way up to the position he got, as opposed to, you know, if you're out there in the 20 post, you really don't have any chance to do that. So those are also factors. Mm-hmm. Which I think, you know, worked in our favor.
We are talking to you 3 days after the Preakness and about 2.5 weeks before the Belmont Stakes. And I don't know if there's been an official decision or official announcement yet, but every indication seems to be that you will not come back in the Belmont. And could you just discuss, you know, the thought process behind that, whatever your decision may be, the hesitation to go in the third leg of the Triple Crown?
You know, well, first, there's been no discussion. I think Chad can't avoid being asked the question.
Right.
I guess tonight I can't. But so Chad's got people at the barn every morning asking. Mm-hmm. As he said, he's going to see how the horse does for a few days and talk to Seth Klarman and talk to myself. We've had really no discussion about that at this point. Clearly, we're trying to manage this horse in a sense of not trying to push him to do too much too quick. The challenge of, if it wasn't a Triple Crown race, to say, hey, your horse just ran a real tough race and he's you know, young in his career, and you want to run a mile and a half race in a couple weeks' notice, by itself, you would say that's ridiculous. The fact that it's a Belmont Stakes and it's a Triple Crown race means you have to take a bigger look at it. Going back to what we talked about earlier, we make the decisions based on, you know, is it a good spot where we think we can win the race? And two, is this something that over the long career of the horse is going to be beneficial to all that he can do then and going down the road? And I would not say that it's ruled in or out. And the example I would give would be that when we made the decision not to go in the Derby, there was really no sense that day that we were coming back for the Preakness. It was to put him on that Derby trail after the Wood. You kind of got to make a decision to train him a bit and keep him fit and ship him down to Churchill. We backed off for a week or two, and he was chomping at the bit to train. All of a sudden, Chad gave him a workout or two and said, this horse is, you know, ready now. We're not going to think about races later in the year. So anything can happen. I would note that another factor clearly is there's a lot of big races down the road, and obviously we, growing up near Saratoga, having Chad grew up by Saratoga, Seth comes in and spends a lot of time at Saratoga. There's, you know, the Jim Dandy, there's the Travers up there, and some other races in the fall that are a factor. And I think the landscape changes a bit, too, from the standpoint of it used to be you kind of had a nice three-year-old. You think about maybe the Breeders' Cup at your end. I think people see what Arrogate did last year and didn't even get started as early as our horse. And all of a sudden, he ran for $12 million race in the Pegasus and a 10 in the Dubai World Cup. Well, the Pegasus is up to $16 million. And the Dubai World Cup hasn't announced what they said. They want to make it the richest purse. So, obviously, we'd have to get really good at any of these horses to beat Arrogate and some of these horses. But if you're improving, you sure would like to have your horse still ready to go for maybe $16, maybe $18, $20 million, two races back-to-back. That's a lot of money as well, so.
And Practical Joke is picking it up from fourth as they make their way to the top of the stretch. Cinder Garden, Big Gray Rocket have run three quarters in 108-3, and they turn for home with Cinder Garden in front. Big Gray Rocket has given way, and here is Practical Joke coming up alongside of Cinder Guard, and they hook up at the eighth pole. Practical Joke on the outside. Cinder Guard keeps on fighting. Oh, what a race he's running today. Cinder Guard, Practical Joke, they're bobbing heads down to the wire in the champagne. It is too close to call. Cinder Guard and Practical Joke hit the wire together.
Well, too close to call, not necessarily. It was Practical Joke winning the champagne for the team of Seth Clearman and Bill Lawrence and, of course, Chad Brown. And here you win the Hopeful and Champagne, two of the biggest two-year-old races on the calendar. And at the same time, Cloud Computing was still several months away from his first start. If you look back to that champagne day, Bill, could you ever imagine that Cloud Computing and not Practical Joke was the one that would put your guys' colors in the winner's circle for a Triple Crown race?
No, not really at that stage. We knew kind of last summer we had three. We had Favorable Outcome, Practical Joke, Cloud Computing Before They Run, were all horses that Chad was high on. We actually thought Favorable Outcome, and I think the betters did. We ran in a couple of entry in the Hopeful, and Favorable Outcome we actually thought was a better horse at that point. And then, again, with these young horses, they come in and surprise you, and Practical Joke showed up in the Hopeful, and ran a, you know, huge race in a champagne, and again, you know, you talk about managing, you kind of, there's no races left for the two-year-old. He had run three races in a very short period, and I think about 6-7 weeks, and really tough races. I mean, the Hopeful, we just nosed out Royal Copy, who's owned by a friend of mine, Bill Mack, and then we beat Syndergaard by the same little nose, and then you go out to the Breeders' Cup, and somebody says, well, maybe the horse, you know, doesn't want to go longer. Well, we're pushing these horses pretty quick. So we were high on that horse. We were happy that he came back. Favorable Outcome hasn't had a, you know, bad campaign. He won the Swell Stakes, got a little chip, but he'll be back sprinting. And Cloud Computing has been a good surprise. But I have lots of friends who ask me, and I said, even though Practical Joke had a couple of grade ones, well, you know, he's a really good horse. I said, this Cloud Computing, from what we're hearing, could be really, really special. And, of course, when he kind of didn't win the Wood, everybody's like, well, what do you mean? I said, you know, we listen to Chad. And I think a few people have picked up and gone back to something that he was quoted. He said the horse were very, very excited about this horse, a very, very high. Mm-hmm. Not many trainers will say we're very excited, let alone very, very. And so he's always felt really good about this horse, but you know, they got to show up and do it on the track. And so we had a weird feeling. You go to these big races, you hope for the best, but you got to be prepared because everybody thinks, you know, they got a nice horse. But we felt better than kind of being a bit of a long shot. And obviously it's an upset. You're running against the Derby winner, the Breeders' Cup juvenile champ. But we just felt like this horse was going to put on a big performance, and all the guys in the barn that worked for Chad, and Chad felt just really good. And, we, you know, we felt he was going to show up. Whether he was good enough, you just don't know, because you don't know how good the other horses are and how good they are on that day. But, you know, we feel excited. And I don't, you know which one will be the one at the end of the year or next year that will end up with the better campaign. But there's clearly, you know, a lot of upside on both. But cloud computing for just getting started, you know, maybe, you know, Seth and I talked a few days before and said, this guy could be really special. And let's see what, you know, take it one race at a time. But he could just turn out to be special. And the fact that he lost a couple of races really, I think, is just an experience in us having to kind of give him a shot to get on the Triple Crown trail, you know, relatively quickly. But, you know, we you know, think that he's a pretty nice horse, and time will tell. I think, you know, you even wrote an article and said the best horse might not have won, and I get that based on experience. And, you know, what I would say is he might be pretty good considering what he had to do in kind of a couple of months. So but maybe in a few months he'll be the best, and maybe some of these other ones will be. That's the nature of this business. You can, you know, be excited and hope, but he's given us no reason to think that he isn't going to, you know, do a lot of special things going forward as well. There's a lot of upside on him.
I'm sure there is, and we'll find out, of course, as the year winds down with the Travers, of course, in the Breeders' Cup Classic and all those. We will continue our talk with Bill Lawrence after this message from TaylorMade.
TaylorMade, where customer success is our primary focus.
Ladies and gentlemen, we present Harvard of Grace.
7-10, you want to get 10 million, Hunter, right here, we're going to get it, that's away now, 10, 10 to 10, here, we're going to get it, I'm going to get 10. Bruce, right here, $10 million even.
TaylorMade, where customer success is our primary focus. But don't take our word for it. Here's what some of our most satisfied customers have to say.
This is Brian Kahn, Los Angeles, California. I've been associated with, worked for, and been a client of TaylorMade and the TaylorMade family for close to 30 years now. Had great success with them. They've always been transparent and honest, and I always felt I was getting the right end of the deal with them. Highly recommend their services, from boarding, public sales, private sales. I've used all. All have been a success and a pleasure to deal with.
Here's longtime TaylorMade client Rick Porter of Fox Hill Farms, owner of numerous champions and grade one winners, such as 2011 Horse of the Year, Havre de Grace.
I've been doing business with TaylorMade for over 20 years. Everyone knows they are the best sellers at auction, but they have also done great work for me in the private market. They have an unbelievable network that can help you buy or sell privately in a very professional and transparent way. I wish I had these guys working for me when I was in the car business.
Discover what TaylorMade can do for you. Visit TaylorMadeFarm.com.
Welcome back with Bill Lawrence on this week's TDN podcast, brought to you by TaylorMade. And Bill, you started out in the business on your own, but at a point you joined forces with Seth Clareman, and the two of you have been very successful together. Why did you decide to go in with Seth rather than do this as you had been doing as a one-man venture?
Actually started out together, and along the way bought some horses of my own a few years later, actually. So when I first started thinking about pulling the trigger after, you know, dreaming about buying horses, and all my friends reminded me that when we were kids, we said, you know, if anybody makes some money, they should buy some horses so everybody else can root for them. After a few years of being nudged a little, I said, well, you know, I'm at a point with my career and the kids are a bit older that, you know, I can devote some time to it. A mutual friend of mine that I went to college with and knows Seth in Boston and introduced us to the track, and we had obviously gone to the races for a few years, so you should talk to Seth about what he's doing. And after me picking his brain and talking about what my plan was, he came to me a day or two later and said, hey, let's talk. You know, you're a bright guy, I'm a bright guy. Why are we going to try to compete against each other and buy the same horses and do things? What would it mean any less to you if, you know, you were one of two or three hands on, because he had another partner at the time, and we, you know, won the Derby and we won it together. We won the Preakness or we won the Belmont. As I read it to him on Saturday, nope, felt just as good if I was there myself. Mm-hmm. And in some ways probably better, because you had somebody else to share it with, and your family and friends are important too, but this horse business has a lot of ups and downs, and, you know, there are, you know, really bad days. There's some bad days. Every day's a good day if it's not one of those with the horses. There's some great days, and then it was just an awesome day like there was Saturday. Mm-hmm. And so, It was great, and so Seth's been out a long time. I was happy both at the Derby and the Preakness. I told him, look, I'm going to have fun, win or lose. I want to make sure you're happy. He's been putting money in the game for 25 years. He's kind of press shy and kind of likes to stay out of the limelight, but I don't know anybody who's probably a bigger proponent of the sport and has put more money into the sport. Certainly in the U.S., probably not the case. Probably maybe Sheikh Mohammed, the Coolmore guys, and some people overseas have. But I really felt good for him. So, I mean, we really have worked together along the way. I bought a few horses on my own. I have a couple two-year-olds on my own this year. But for the most part, other than a few horses here or there, we've had, probably 500 horses together. And it's a tough sport, but I think between us and by trying to, look at everything we do and get, the best trainers we can that are the best people buying horses for us, the best farms to break the horses, the best everything along the way, we think we've gotten better. I say that warily because this is a sport when you think you've got it figured out, you tend to go into a slump. But I think we also got very fortunate in the fact that we caught somebody very young who was hungry and eager and is still so hungry and eager and hasn't, gotten to the point where they've done well in the sport and maybe eases up a little like everybody does in life. Chad Brown has just been huge for us in terms of being able to each year shift more and more of our operation to him. I think the difference now is we don't have necessarily more horses than we've had before. We had a lot of them with Chad, but we have more good ones. So when we look at the year, I mean, you mentioned two nice horses, but if you have one good horse or two, it's hard to always keep them healthy and always have them keep on schedule and everything to work out well. People hear a story like California Chrome where they get one horse and he stays healthy for years and wins. That's unfortunately not the norm. I think there's a lot of owners who get a few horses and they think one's pretty good and, then he gets hurt and they don't really have anything else running in big races. I mean, right at this point, even though we sold some fillies for broodmares and took some retired, we have 8 graded stakes winners in the barn and 2 other horses that, were, one of them's got to be the Sergio Garcia of horse race, and Money Multipliers finished 2nd in 5 different graded stakes and doesn't have a win yet. So he's a pretty nice horse. So, I mean, we have 10 really strong horses that, some of them are coming off of some minor injuries, but when you have that many horses, you have things to get excited with, and you're running a lot of big races. So I think that that's a combination of just trying to get a little better at everything that we do and, having a lot of faith. And Chad has, clearly ramped up our operation in terms of our success.
No doubt about that. Great young trainer, and it was well said about all your accolades about him. Now, Bill, going back to your business life, it's all about making money. And if you're not good at making money, you're not going to succeed, and you're not going to get to the levels that you have, and you're not going to be able to amass the fortune to go out and buy a lot of expensive racehorses. We all know in horse racing, very few owners make money. And now I'm going to throw a quote at you that I found from an old interview that you gave to the Wharton School magazine. You said, "This business," meaning horse racing, "is incongruous to how we would normally think otherwise." And, that's a pretty good way of thinking. In your business world, a lot of people succeed, a lot of people make money. In the horse racing world, it's very, very difficult to make money. So from a guy who on one end of the street is all about making money and in a business that can be very profitable, on the other end of the street is in a business that is very hard to make money, I have to ask, why do you do it? Is it all about the thrills?
Yeah, look, I think it's a passion. I think I grew up 20 miles from Saratoga. I'm sitting real close to where I grew up now, right here, and you go to the track and you get a love for the sport and the love of the animal and the love of the competition, and it just kind of grabs you. In terms of business, we've been very fortunate that over a pretty long period of time, I've had a lot of great people who worked for me, a lot of great clients, and a lot of them have called, and obviously the people who I work with, and I'm spoke to them. I spoke to the co-founder of my firm the other day, retired and hasn't been working. I said, look, a piece of this is you, because everything we've done together and all the great clients we've had kind of let us be in a position to have some money. That being said, there are, you know, some days where things aren't going well where you go, boy, this is really expensive. Usually those days when you're not in such a good mood come from your spouse who says, why do you do this? You're miserable today. Or says, is it possible between the long drive from Gulfstream to a place we have in Jupiter in the winter, you can stop swearing in that 75-mile drive once and say, why do I do these things? And you say, look, I try, but I guess I would describe it. Another friend of mine sent me a note, and he said, how does it feel? And I said, it almost, but not quite, makes up for all those dollars and all those bad days we've spent in sport. And maybe it does. And we've had some good thrills. This one is big.
Right. Right.
I don't know. I guess there was a sale, and I did bid on some horses. Luckily, I didn't buy. I would say luckily, I actually wanted a few horses, but I didn't get any. But you would think you'd be ready to buy anything right afterwards. But you have a love for the sport, and I would describe it as it's the old adage, you know, don't go to the casino with more than you can lose in your pocket.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
And I think for us, for the horses, I think both Seth and I have, you know, an idea of what we're willing to put into it in terms of trying to make money. We did last year. We will this year. We continue to strive to do that. Although, you know, it can be tough. It certainly isn't anything we're going to become rich at, but we're trying to make some money and kind of stay in the business without it being a deep pocket thing every year. But it's the thrill. It's the excitement. It's the competition. I think maybe there's a part of it as you get older. You know, you maybe can't play basketball or run as fast or do other things. So you have to be an owner rather than a participant. this is, you know, there's some intangibles, and they really came through, you know, as I said, about 10 times more. I mean, to have your kids show up at the big events and have your family, your friends, and I just have been overwhelmed between the, you know, for all the horse races we've won. I guess I was a little surprised last year that when Takeover Target won the Dixie, mm-hmm. I heard from people I haven't heard, only because they were ready to watch the Preakness and saw the race right before, and we won that one on the line too. But between the Derby and this, I've heard from people and the memories of thinking about people I went to school with in the third grade, high school, college, worked with at different places, and you lose touch with people along the way. But the number of people who have reached out and are so happy for you, and the memories you have thinking of people, and text, calls, things, just really makes me feel so fortunate of all the good people I've had in my life, and be able to share what we're doing with a lot of people. That's pretty good intangible, too. So
it sure sounds like it. We will come back with Bill Lawrence, talk more about how the Brown Clareman Lawrence team works after this message from our sponsor, TaylorMade.
M. Shawish has taken the lead as they come into the final 16th.
The main reason we ended up trying M. Shawish on the dirt is he was just so impressive in the mornings to watch train on the dirt. And, you know, he continually worked exceptionally well, showed us that, you know, he was able not only to finish his work strongly, but then gallop out brilliantly. And you know, we just felt like he had a dirt pedigree as well, being a Medaglia d'Oro out of a Thunder Gulch mare, that it, you know, wouldn't be a surprise if he ran well in the dirt. And certainly he did.
And it is M. Shawish, the winner of the Don Handicap.
And, Bill, many owners, we've talked so much about Chad Brown, who have gravitated towards him, have come to him with grass horses, and that's where he really sort of first established himself and got that reputation. Now, you and Seth have had some good grass runners over the years, but it appears to me that you're taking a more traditional approach towards ownership to go to the sales and buy a good dirt horse with classic potential. Am I right about that? Is that the case?
I think in any sport, I mean, you need the athletes. If I have a really fast group of guys in the basketball court, I'm probably going to press and I'm going to probably run the fast break. If I have a bunch of slow plotting people, I'm going to try to slow the clock down. And so I think that because Chad had some early success with some grass horses, people said he's proven himself there, so let's try to give him some grass horses. In our case, we're trying to compete at a lot of levels. Clearly a little bit of early success with him was on the grass. I wouldn't say that was by design. I mean, it hasn't been as if we didn't want to have a horse that could be competitive in the Derby or the Preakness. We just hadn't gotten there despite, you know, trying a number of times to kind of get the one that we thought could, you know, get the job done. So And I think that's kind of true with Chad. Clearly, in our case, Chad's very instrumental in, you know, leading himself and some others to buy the horses for us. And it clearly has been to, you know, try to find horses that can win kind of grade one races on both the dirt and the turf. And I think he's starting to win more races on the dirt, and I think that will continue. I would also say, I mean, he, in a very short time, not only became proficient on the turf, but he became so much better than everyone else. And I, rather than people focusing on, boy, why is he winning more on the dirt in big races, because he's still winning some of them, they should have focused on the gap was so good, you know, that he was so much better than everybody in a short period on the turf, that that's a tough standard to get to. But he's competitive. He wants to be the best at everything. And, you know, we fully expect him, you know, to be that way. And again, I think that that's showing. I mean, we've got three very good dirt three-year-olds that, with Cloud Computing, Practical Joke, and again, even Favorable Outcome, who's won this well, and we think he'll come back. And I guess what'll be the Allen Jerkins, not the King's Bishop anymore.
Right.
Take a while to remember to call it that, but you know, so he's got some good dirt horses, so I think that he'll do well. I mean, so you know, you take again where the horse leads you. He's not, you know, he's not taking a horse and saying, boy, we probably could have won the Derby, but I just want to win some turf stake with him, so I put him on the turf. You know, he's letting the horse take him kind of where they want to go, and you know, again, I think success breeds more success, and I think that he'll continue to get more success, you know, at everything he does.
Sure, sure. Now, Bill, the let's go over some numbers here. Cloud Computing costs $200,000 as a yearling. Practical Joke, $240,000. We've talked about Takeover Target, another horse you guys had success with, $175,000. So it looks like this is your price range. This is your feel comfortable in the $200,000 neighborhood. I have not seen you guys, you know, outbidding Coolmore for the $1 million yearling. Am I right about that? Is that kind of your target? And why do you, Chad, and the team feel that's sort of the best area of the sales to shop in?
Yeah, no, I mean, we have some limits, and they're certainly not as high as, you know, a handful of buyers. We certainly know that we start seeing hands go up from, there's about 5, 6, maybe 8, 10, depending on the sale people, that they have kind of, in some cases, kind of an unlimited amount that they'll pay. I think in many cases, they're going after colts that they think could be a stallion, and so they're trying to get in early on it, or in the case of some fillies, it's been real tough at some of the sales, too, because people that have a large breeding operation are really aggressive in terms of a filly that looks good and has a nice pedigree. Since our primary business is racing, I mean, we have a handful of brood mares and a couple stallions that we have some shares in that were formerly ours, and it's, you know, tough to compete there. And while you look at the numbers, I mean, we spend a lot of time with numbers and are very analytical. I guess I've spent a lot of time, you know, I think I'm pretty busy. Seth's probably one of the few people that's busier than me at work. And I spend a lot of time and at some of my people at work do some number crunching. And these $1 million horses on balance are a little better, but not maybe five times better than a $200,000 horse. And it's hard. It's hard to get on those horses. And have it economically, you know, make sense. So, you know, we've got some ranges and of what we do. You know, we've stretched sometimes more than people know. I think we've done pretty good when we bought a lot of these horses to kind of hide what we're doing. Then, you know, if you go back and look, you wouldn't see our names on a lot of yearlings. Some people figure it out, but, you know, we're competing, and so we don't need everybody to know exactly what we're doing at all times, because you're at an auction and you're trying to get things for the lowest price you can.
Right, right. Now, you mentioned that you and Seth are only minimally involved in the breeding industry, but now you have 2 3-year-olds in the barn who are grade one winners on the dirt, which is what is the main standard people are looking for in stallions. So, you know, now that you've achieved the success, any increased interest in becoming breeders?
No, I don't think we'll ever be breeders. Just being owners is takes a fair amount of time between managing and interacting with the trainers and going, you know, seeing the races, going to the tracks. I don't think either of us is disengaged from other things, work, family, and other things that we want to have a farm or anything like that. We probably have held a few more broodmares because we've had some with some nice pedigrees that have had decent careers. In other cases, some with nice pedigrees that didn't have much of a career but were worth breeding to. And we have currency swap. We have central banker. And obviously, if we start adding some of the names that you mentioned, cloud computing and practical joke, then that may, you know, skew us to keep a few more broodmares. But that's like a whole other business. Mm-hmm. And I guess maybe if we could find the Chad Brown of that business, maybe we'd think about it more. But you really have to trust people to do something like that. And we don't want it to become a time-consuming money pit because we kind of have one of those by being horse owners already.
Right, right. Gotcha. Now, after all these nice questions, I'm going to bring up something that you're probably not going to put a big smile on your face. I'm sure it won't put a smile on your face. But you do have a number that I'm sure you want to change, 0 for 15 in the Breeders' Cup. And how much is that stick in your craw, and how big would it be to make that 1 for 16 or 2 for 17, get that accomplishment out of the way as well?
I never heard that number, never thought about it. So that's
interesting. Yeah, I bet.
Now I feel like, seriously, I never thought about we were 0 for 15. Now I feel like Todd Pletcher.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Well, now I got to start with, let's see, we've run two horses in the same race a couple times.
Right.
So, I would describe it a different way. We just feel like we're moving up a level. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's like baseball, you move from the minor leagues and the C to the B, the AAA to the big leagues and the All-Stars and the Hall of Fame or whatever it is. We just have gradually kind of advanced to where we're winning races, we're winning graded stakes, and we're happy with what we're doing. I mean, we obviously have come close. We've, I think, a second, a third, and a fourth in a Breeders' Cup race, but, you know, we just feel like we're kind of climbing the mountain, and this was a big one. And I think the caliber of horses we have, and, mm-hmm. you know, with Chad, with most of them, we can get there. But, I mean, we went from, you know, maybe having a nice horse or two, you know, every year. And a lot of our runs in the Breeders' Cup were two-year-olds that, you know, it's the competition to make the field of 12, 14 horses and think you have a shot when horses are run two, three times. Is a little different than running the Breeders' Cup Classic, where you're running against the best of all ages and very experienced horses. But, I mean, we won 9 graded stakes with 8 different horses last year. So I think we're just so happy that we have got a lot of really good horses that can win stakes. We're winning grade ones. Now we moved up and we've won a Triple Crown race. You know, if the next logical thing is to win a Breeders' Cup race, that's great. But you can only go where the horse takes you. I mean, we're not by any means not trying to win. I mean, I'm certain Todd's not trying not to win the Preakness, or Chad's not trying to not win the Derby. I guess he's 0 for 4. I mean, everybody's trying to win the races, but this is a tough sport. I mean, one horse can win it.
Right, right.
People said Prodigal Joe can't get the distance, and I said, well, if he can't get a mile and a quarter, there's only 4 horses that got it a little better than him
right.
in the Kentucky Day. So there's 20,000 others that didn't get the distance, so...
There you go. Now, Bill, you've deservedly given a lot of credit to Chad Brown, but let's bring in another person that I think has been pivotal in your success, and a fellow that has a wonderful reputation in the bloodsuck industry is Mike Ryan. And I've talked to him, and I've heard from others about how much time and effort he puts into helping all his clients, you guys in particular, find these horses for the 200,000 that can become grade one winners on the dirt. What has Mike meant to the team?
Yeah, Mike's been a great addition. I mean, Chad's given us an enormous amount of his time initially to buy horses. The nice thing about Chad is he'll tell you if your horse stinks, which saves you a lot of time and money,
mm-hmm.
whereas a lot of people just never want to give an owner bad news. He'll also tell you where he thinks he needs to get better. And when he started buying horses, he'd say, I'm doing this, but I got to get better at this. And it's tough when you have a trainer buying horses. I mean, the Keeneland sale is 2 weeks.
Right.
You go down there early and start looking at horses. They've got horses to train. I mean, Chad was supposed to meet me on Saturday. And when I called him after dinner, he said, I'm already in a car on the way back to New York. And he got to New York at 1:30 and realized he's got to train horses for everybody else. And once, you know, the thought of having a celebration drink was there, but he goes, I got to get back to work. So the sales get tough. So he came to us a few years ago. We knew Mike a little and had some interaction. And, you know, he wanted to add Mike to the team in terms of helping him go and, you know, pick out horses. And Mike's done a great job and really it helps Chad both with some ideas of his own as well as helping Chad get pointed in the right direction mm-hmm. and narrowing down. I mean, when you have 5,000 horses, particularly at that sale at Keeneland, mm-hmm. Which is where this horse came from, it's just tough to cover that ground. And, you know, we like the fact that, you know, Chad's involved with directly or at least leading, you know, the people he wants, like Mike, to get him the kind of horses he wants, so we don't have this, well, you know, I do a better job here, but somebody bought horses that are awful for me. Or the people that buy the horses say, oh, we gave him great horses. I don't know what's wrong with your trainer. So we're trying to take that element out, and Mike's been great. But, you know, we've got a lot of people and a lot of farms that break the horses too, and we're challenging people to, you know, be their best, and because that's what it takes. And people have been really doing a good job the last few years at every level.
Well, Bill, thanks so much for your time. Congratulations on the success in the Preakness. Congratulations on all your success over the years. And it really looks like the team of Clareman, Lawrence, and Chad Brown is moving on to even bigger, better things. So we thank you for being part of the TDN podcast brought to you by TaylorMade and wish you all the success, not only with cloud computing, but all your other horses down the road. Thanks so much, Bill.
All right. Thank you.